Hello, hello, y'all. Hey, it's me, Robin. And before we get into today's episode, I'm here to let you know that the club is open right now for new members. I'm going to take a couple minutes to fill you in on all that the club is offering right now. So if you know for sure you're not interested in joining the club, you're just going to want to hit the forward button a few times until you hear that baffling behavior show jingle. Okay, so the club is a virtual community for families of kids with vulnerable nervous systems and big baffling behaviors. Many families in the club are parenting kids with a history of complex trauma, but definitely not all. Some are parenting kids with vulnerabilities that emerge from their neurotype or their sensory system or their giftedness or their neuroimmune disorder. And of course, some have no idea why their child's nervous system is so vulnerable. The primary purpose of the club and why I've created it the way that I have is connection and co-regulation. Because when I reflect back on my time as a therapist, it wasn't the skills and strategies and tools and techniques I taught parents that mattered the most. What mattered most was how connection and co-regulation strengthened their owl brain so that they could stay more regulated in the face of the chaos in their home. Then they could, number one, actually use the tools, and number two, start to feel a little bit better even before the tools started to work. The club can be accessed online both through your browser on your computer and through an app. And it's open, of course, 24/7. There's a very active forum, a huge video library, and multiple live events every month. Sometimes I teach a masterclass on a specific topic. Sometimes we come together for group coaching or just to ask questions and pick my brain. We have two sessions every month called Connect and Co-Regulates, and those are designed to offer exactly that. There's no teaching, no coaching, just a place for you to be seen and heard by people who get it. Currently, we are also offering once a month bonus sessions for siblings of dysregulated kids. The club is intended to be kind of like a buffet. There is a ton in it, not because you're supposed to do everything in the club. You take what you need when you need it and come back when you're ready for more. If you could use a little extra support, consider joining us. You can read all about all the details over at robingoble.com/the club. I'll put a link in the show notes. And we're open today until the end of the day, Friday, May 3rd. All right, y'all, here's that episode you're waiting for.
So when your kid's behavior is baffling, and yours is too sometimes, yeah, I know. Let's take a break from all the bamboozle here on the Baffling Behavior Show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Baffling Behavior Show, or the podcast formerly known as Parenting After Trauma. I'm your host, Robin Goble, former psychotherapist turned author, educator, podcaster, community creator. And today's podcast episode is another replay. We have been doing Friday replays for the last, 2 months now? So today's replay is the replay of an episode that helps you tease out the difference between lowering demands or lowering the bar on our expectations for our child and enabling quote unquote bad behavior. So last week, I replayed an episode on low-demand parenting with author and expert Amanda Diekman. And the week before that, I replayed an episode about school refusal with Eliza Fricker, which incorporates ideas of low-demand parenting. So this is always the inevitable next question. Therefore, I thought it made a lot of sense to replay this episode too. We're going to go ahead and just dive right in. Today, we are talking about the difference between enabling or low demand parenting, or codependence versus co-regulation. It's a topic that was inspired by folks in the club. It's actually something we've been talking about on and off for like a couple months. But then 2 weeks ago, I aired that podcast with Amanda Diekman, right? With Low Demand Parenting and her new book and what low demand parenting even is and what that's done for her family. And it's kind of kicked up those conversations in the club again, like what's enabling, what's lowering demands? How do we know the difference? And really underneath that question is how do I as the adult regulate myself? I said co-regulate, which I guess is, you know, there's that, but regulate myself through the fear of we're not quite sure if this is the right thing to do. I'm not quite sure if this approach is the right move for me or my child. And that's a really valid fear. I think that's a pretty valid fear in general with a outside the box of traditional parenting styles, right? Like what we talk about on here, the parenting with the brain and mind is new. I mean, even at my house, I sometimes look at my husband and I'm like, this is like one big giant experiment. Are we doing it right? And then that, of course, kind of begs the question of like, what does right even mean? Anyway, I'm going to get off track right now with a big philosophical question. Let's get back to how do we know if we're not just enabling really bad behavior? So I went, of course, to the most obvious place and I went to Google. I was like, what is even our definition? What's the working definition of enabling? And that was really interesting. The definition of enable, if we're not talking about mental health, is simply to give someone or something the authority or the means to do something or to make something operational, to activate. So that's a really interesting thing to keep in mind, that outside the mental health field, enable doesn't have a negative connotation at all. It's to give someone or something the authority or the means to do something. Okay, so hold that in mind for just a second, because then I did go to what the American Psychological Association defines enabling as. And what they wrote is that enabling is, one, a process whereby someone, i.e. the enabler, contributes to continued maladaptive or pathological behavior in another person. But even the APA goes on to give a second definition of enabling, and they write the process of encouraging or allowing individuals to meet their own needs and achieve desired ends. So clearly, when folks are worried about enabling behavior, they're worried about that first definition, right? That we're kind of unwittingly or unintentionally behaving in a way that's contributing to continued quote unquote maladaptive or pathological behavior. And I get that. That's a really common fear in parenting. Am I helping or hurting? And it's really sometimes hard to know the difference. So that's what we're going to dive into here. Now, in order to contrast enabling with co-regulation or lowering demands, let's talk about the science behind the concept of lowering demands, like Amanda Diekman talked about 2 weeks ago in the Lowering Demands podcast. Demands, expectations, all elicit a stress response. Now, stress is not inherently bad. I have a whole episode all about the stress response system. It's episode 94. I'll link to that in the show notes. Stress is not inherently bad. In fact, stress is a necessary piece of growth. All of us have different levels in which demands move from being hard to too hard. Remember how in that episode from 2 weeks ago with Amanda Diekman, she talked about that distinction between hard versus too hard. And hard versus too hard is different for absolutely every single one of us. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, you likely have a child with a vulnerable nervous system for any host of reasons. Maybe your child has a history of trauma. Maybe your child has some neurodiversity. It could be so many things, and it could be no known reason at all. You just know that your child has a sensitized stress response system. Now, to strengthen the stress response system, the very first thing we have to do is lower the stress to the point where the stress response system can take a break. An overactive, a sensitized stress response system is kind of like stuck in a pattern of constantly having a significant stress response to even low amounts of stressors. And the low amount of stressor could be, right, in your family, it could be like, it's time to do our homework. It's time to go to school. It's time to put our shoes away. I need you to wait 5 minutes before dinner is served because it's not quite ready. All of these things are stressors, and all of us are continually managing the stress of life, you know, like on a moment-to-moment basis. Life is stressful. When we have a resilient stress response system, we can navigate feelings of disappointment or feelings of, I don't want to do that, in a way that we regulate through those feelings, right? Without kind of going bananas. If our stress response system is exceptionally sensitized, teeny tiny little regular day-to-day life stressors elicit an enormous stress response. If we want to strengthen the stress response system, we have to lower the stress. We have to lower the demands. We have to find a way for the demands of life, the regular moment to moment, everyday demands, move into that category of hard instead of too hard. Okay. Then once we've done that, and we've relieved the stress response system of the burden of being constantly activated and then often overactivated because it's so sensitive, right? Once we've done that, then we can strengthen the stress response system by helping our kids experience stress that is moderate, predictable, and tolerable. And that's based on the work of Dr. Bruce Perry and his studies and clinical research around the stress response system. Now, what is moderate and tolerable amounts of stress? So the thing is that that's completely subjective. What's moderate and tolerable for me isn't the same as what's moderate and tolerable for you. It isn't the same as what's moderate and tolerable for my kid or my husband. We all have different definitions of what's moderate and tolerable. And sure, some of this is going to be based on our histories. And if we have, you know, a really sensitized stress response system due to adverse experiences, right? Like due to too much stress. But a lot of this is just temperament. Okay. So we really have to remember that moderate and tolerable amounts of stress are totally subjective. It's going to really vary based on so many factors, including just our inborn biological temperament and our neurotype. So this then is where we fall back to the absolute number one most important parenting tool, which is attunement. If you're listening to the Baffling Behavior Show as a therapist or some other kind of helping professional, I'll bet you've wondered how to incorporate owls, watchdogs, and possums directly into your work with kids. My colleague, Rose LaPierre, and I co-wrote a course together called All Behavior Makes Sense, Play Therapy with Kids with Vulnerable Nervous Systems. And Rose will be teaching it virtually in May. The course offers 6 CEs, including APT CEs, through the TheraPlay Institute. Part 1 of this course begins May 10th, so you have until then to register. But space is limited due to CE requirements, so I wouldn't delay registering if I was you. I'll put a live link down in the show notes, or just go to robingoble.com/TheraPlay2024. And then the second most important parenting tool is repair, because perfect attunement isn't possible. We're never going to strive for perfect attunement. The work of Dr. Ed Tronick makes it really clear that even the most attuned parenting are attuned to their kids around 30% of the time. I wanted to pause the episode real quick and read you this testimonial from one club member. This person writes in, "The club has been life-changing for me. For me, feeling alone in the stress and the overwhelm of parenting a child with complex trauma has been traumatic. Here in the club, we are finding healing for ourselves by feeling seen and heard and validated, even though we may have come here for our children's healing." Oh, y'all, that is exactly what I'm trying to do in the club, to create a space that's for you that also brings healing to your kids. So the club's open for new members until April 28th. We'd love to have you. robingoble.com/the club. All right, let's get back to the episode. That's a lot of times we're out of attunement, even in what Tronick and other researchers in our field would call good enough parenting, which really just means the kind of parenting that tends to lead to the outcome of secure attachment. 30%. Okay. So what that means is there's a lot of times with our kids, even when we're doing amazing, that we're falling out of attunement. So yes, the number one skill in parenting is attunement. The second skill is repair, because we are inevitably going to be out of attunement with our kids. We are inevitably going to, quote unquote, mess up. And I have a whole other podcast episode all about rupture repair. That's episode 80. I'll make sure a link to it goes in the show notes. Sometimes, y'all, we're just going to create too much stress for our kids. And sometimes we're going to do it because we're trying to like strengthen their stress response system, essentially, right? Like we're trying to help them grow in their tolerance for stress. We are trying to help them grow what's hard instead of growing what's too hard, right? And sometimes we're going to get it wrong. Like sometimes we're going to really insist on an expectation in our kids only to kind of decide later, like, I think that one was too hard. And sometimes we're going to do the opposite. Sometimes we're going to set demands that are, or expectations that are too low, and not trust our children's capacity to be okay when they're not okay, and to offer them the co-regulation that their neural circuitry needs in order to really grow and strengthen their stress response system. Either way, you know, making things too hard or not hard enough, either way, we're going to do it. And so we're just going to learn the wonderful art of repair. And again, you're going to go back to my previous episode all about rupture repair to learn more about the art of repair. So how do we know the difference then between enabling, which I think would mean lowering the demands too much, versus rebuilding the stress response system? And what I have found in all of my years of clinical practice, working with kids, working with parents, being present and curious about the state of my own nervous system, the number one thing that we can turn to determine if we are lowering demands too much and shifting into enabling, or lowering demands just enough so that we then have the ability to like strengthen the stress response system, is what is the state of my nervous system? What is the state of the nervous system of the grown-up who's making the decision to lower demands is that person's nervous system making the decision to lower demands from a state of connection or protection? Now, if you're new around here, connection or protection is a concept I'm talking about all the time. It was one of my very, very, very first podcast episodes. In fact, I probably should update it because I'm imagining that my understanding of connection or protection has probably changed, you know, since I recorded that episode a couple of years ago. But you can go all the way back in the podcast app and look for a very early episode called Connection or Protection. I will find what number that is and I'll put it down in the show notes and link you to it. But we're so often talking about connection or protection, the state of our nervous system with relation to our kids. And it's really important to take all of this information and apply it to ourselves as well. Am I in my owl brain or am I in my watchdog or possum brain? Am I lowering this demand from a place of seeing my kids struggle and knowing that they need help, right? Like it's too hard. Or am I lowering this demand from a place of me being really uncomfortable with their struggle? And therefore, I'm not exactly decreasing their demands for them. I'm actually kind of doing it more for me because I'm having such a hard time tolerating that distress. When I'm lowering demands for me, because I'm having a hard time tolerating that their distress, that is almost always coming from my nervous system being in a state of protection somewhere on the watchdog or the possum pathway. When I'm lowering demands because of attunement and wanting to find the sweet spot of stress for my child that is an appropriate amount of stress load for their stress response system, I'm typically making those choices from a nervous system in a state of connection or from my own owl brain. So let me give you an example, a really low stakes example. It's an example I may have even used before. I want you to imagine watching a preschooler work on a puzzle and they're getting frustrated and can't make the pieces fit, starting to demonstrate signs of frustration. Maybe they're whining, maybe their movements are getting a little jerkier or a little more forceful. So then as the observing caregiver, we have a choice here. Do we reduce or eliminate their struggle by finding the piece for them? Or do we offer co-regulation and support through the struggle? So the question is, when does it shift from hard to too hard? And deciphering this for our kids comes from a place of attunement, one to ourselves, and then attunement to our kids. So we're taking into, we're keeping in mind like all the things we know about our child, just in general, like what do we know about them and how they manage stress and do problem solving and all that kind of stuff. But also, what do we know about that child in this exact moment, right? For all sorts of reasons, all of us have a lot of variations in our ability to tolerate stress, right? Like sometimes I've got capacity to tolerate enormous amounts of stress. And sometimes I have the capacity to tolerate very, very little stress. And knowing the difference for myself comes with self-attunement. Knowing the difference for your child is going to come with attunement to them and everything you know about them in this exact moment, as well as everything you know about them from your entire relationship with them. When they first start to struggle or they're in like a low level of arousal or activation, you can offer some support with co-regulation. If you solve the puzzle for them, then they're really missing that opportunity to strengthen their stress response system, experience mastery, explore their own problem-solving skills, which all of these things are very, very important. Learning the felt sense in our bodies of things can be not okay and then be okay again. I can be okay even when I'm not okay. All of those beliefs that we end up storing in our own bodies and our own nervous systems come from having experiences of being kind of not okay, right? And having somebody co-regulate us through being not okay. Basically, it comes from having stress experiences that are predictable, moderate, and tolerable, like Perry says. But as you're watching this child do this puzzle, there might come a point where they've struggled for long enough, right? It shifts from this was hard to this is too hard. Their distress is just not tolerable anymore. It's not moderate for them. And so you help them find the piece and solve the puzzle. Now what they're learning, which is different than learning, I can be okay when I'm not okay, or I can do hard things and figure it out even when they're hard and stressful. Now instead what they're learning is equally as important, which is I can trust others to help me when I need help. And the difference between the two, the difference between hard and too hard, is not something I can tell you about, right? It's something that comes from your attunement with yourself and then with your child. Some of you have kids who need really, really, really low demands and expectations in order for the stress that they're experiencing to be predictable, moderate, and tolerable. And some of you, if you lowered the demand that much for your kid wouldn't experience enough stress. They don't need the demand lowered that much. They need to have a predictable and regulated adult co-regulate them through their distress. So how do you determine the difference? You grow your attunement to yourself so that you can then grow an attunement to your child. And then when you get it wrong and you lower the demand too much or you don't lower the demand enough, you offer a repair. So we want to start to determine the difference between these two questions. Am I lowering the demand for my child because it's too hard for me to tolerate the distress? Is it too hard for me to stay regulated and then offer co-regulation through their distress? Or am I lowering the demand because it's too hard for them? And again, there's the difference between hard and too hard. So when my child is dysregulated, is my nervous system shifting into protection mode? Now, it's almost certainly going to at first. The question really isn't, does my nervous system shift into protection mode? That's totally normal and just a part of being human. But does it shift into protection mode and stay in protection mode, which then means I'm making kind of decisions about what to do next from a nervous system that believes it's in danger? Or can I shift back into connection mode before making any decisions about it being hard or too hard? So am I making the choice to lower the demand from my owl brain or from my watchdog or possum brain? Now, how can we tell the difference? Well, mostly we can tell the difference by taking a lot of moments, a lot of opportunities, by fiercely and curiously getting to know our own owl, watchdog, and possum brain. I know we talk a lot about our kids' owl, watchdog, and possum brain, but we can use all that information to really get to know ourselves as well. And if you're a member of the club, you know that we actually spend maybe even more time on that than we do on talking about our kids' owl, watchdog, and possum brain. Maybe it's not more. Maybe it's probably pretty equal, but I think there's some pretty classic moments when I work with families where there's a shift, where we kind of shift from lots of focus on what's happening to our kids to lots of focus to what's happening for us. And we do that without judgment. We do that with a lot of curiosity and self-compassion. And we really, really grow in attunement to ourselves. That's the way we know, am I lowering demands from a nervous system that's in connection mode or a nervous system that's in protection mode? Am I lowering demands making owl brain choices, or am I lowering demands because I believe I'm in danger and I'm making that decision from my watchdog or possum brain? Now, it's very common for me to not even really know the difference until after the fact. Just like you, I am still really growing in my own self-attunement. I am constantly working on it. And there are still some times where I actually kind of think I am in my owl brain. It feels like I'm making a good boundary from my owl brain, from being in connection mode, only to realize later that I actually probably made that decision from maybe more of like a possum people-pleasing space. Or sometimes I kind of make decisions about setting a boundary, lowering demands or not from a what's up watchdog space. I think I'm owl brain, but in retrospect, I reflect back on it and I can see how I ended up making that decision from a space of, uh-oh, things aren't okay. How do I make them okay? Now, the only way that I continue to grow in my own self-awareness and my own discernment from being in connection mode versus being in protection mode is to have enough self-compassion for myself that I'm willing to reflect back on it. And I don't judge my possum brain or my watchdog brain. I can be with and notice, you know, connection mode versus protection mode with a lot of compassion and a lot of curiosity. Many of us grew up in families where the grown-ups struggled to regulate themselves. And that looks a lot of different ways, but I think kind of a overall accurate statement is just to say, we grew up in families where the grown-ups struggled to regulate themselves. So what happens then when we were kids, we learned how important it was to kind of disconnect from or even abandon ourselves and do whatever we could that would allow our grown-up to stay regulated and present. We really, really, really needed that. This was super brilliant. But now it does come with some challenges and that it's hard for some of us to know our own true selves. And we tend to prioritize helping other people feel better so that we can feel better, which sometimes seems altruistic and caring and can even feel like co-regulation in the moment. But when we take a step back, what happens is we realize that we actually made that choice because we needed to feel better. It's just kind of a means to an end to help ourselves feel better. So words like enabling or codependence, those kinds of behaviors, we can think about how they come from wanting to relieve ourselves of our own discomfort. And the tricky thing then with enabling or codependence is that the individual, the other individual, our kids here, aren't getting the practice that they need in being okay when things are hard. Not too hard, just hard. Behaviors that we'd call enabling or codependent come from a nervous system that's in protection mode. Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief? Like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids. But also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now whats. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day. We open for new members periodically, so go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it. And if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audio book, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. Or you can just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.